one squeeze. We've got to talk about festivals. Now, have you been to any festivals of late? Maybe you've headed to Blues Fest in Byron, which is always huge and really hard to get tickets to, or the Gold Coast Film Festival, which is still on, or Bleach Festival, lots of different talent there. And still to come, we've got the Surfers Paradise Live starting today and Blues on Broadbeach to look forward to as well. They're all different festivals, which is great for the community and for visitors to the Gold Coast. I think it really encourages people to go to a place when there's a festival on. So Dr. Tony Matthews is a lecturer in urban and environmental planning at the School of Environment at Griffith Uni. Hello, Tony. I haven't spoken to you before. Matt usually does, doesn't he?
Matt usually does, but it's a pleasure to be on with somebody else. No, love doing the show with Matt, but nice change up to be on
and
with
And I
you.
Love your accent.
Thank you.
Do everybody say that to you?
Some, not everybody.
Not everybody. So what are the main types of festivals popular in cities right now?
Oh, gosh, there's so many, you know. I mean, probably the easiest way to look at this is if we put them into categories. So let's take a look at some of those categories. Mixed media is one, for example. So that's like the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, the Brisbane Festival, where you have a number of different types of productions. You've theatre, dance, cinema, music, etc. So mixed media. Then, of course, you have film festivals like the current Gold Coast Film Festival happening at the moment.
Yeah.
Music festivals, of course, obviously. Then we have pop culture festivals, which got really popular over the last few years. So those are things like sci-fi festivals and comics and cosplay.
They are huge, aren't they?
Huge.
The amount of people walking around last weekend in the supermarket with these outfits on is crazy.
I know, right? It's amazing. Their popularity is just it's exploding in the last couple of years. I mean, probably because of the number of comic book movie adaptations, but nonetheless, a huge burgeoning industry. And then you've got high culture festivals. I use that term loosely, but those are things like opera, choral festivals or writers' festivals. Food and drink festivals, another big growth area.
Yeah, that's my favourite. My favourite festivals, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, you know, things, showcase festivals or sampling, like the food and wine fair, instructive festivals, pop-up restaurants, another way to stage a festival.
Oh, really? Is that classed as a festival?
Well, I mean, a pop-up restaurant festival or a food festival.
Oh, yeah, as an event, yeah.
Yeah, and I think increasingly people are excited by that because it's a sort of it's a one-off event. You know, you either get there for the 2 or 3 days that the restaurant is open or you never.
Yeah, I think in Brisbane they do that in the valley. They have like a laneway and there's pop-up.
Done laneway festivals and pop-up restaurants there. They had had similar on South Bank a few years ago as well. So, and these are happening in cities all over Australia and elsewhere. And then just to round it out, we've got science festivals. You know, science doesn't sound like the most exciting thing, but a lot of these science festivals are really exciting events.
So what do they have in them?
So they're usually, about, let's say a decade ago, scientists all over the world began to realize that communicating science was important, that doing science was important, but communicating it to non-scientists was important. So they started doing science festivals. Like Brisbane just had recently had a science festival, which Griffith was heavily involved in. So these are festivals that show the potential and application of science to community audiences or lay audiences, non-science audiences. So there's usually a fair bit of whiz-bang pop associated with these things, exploding chemicals and things flying out of jars and stuff like that.
And I guess it would get people interested, like younger people, if they're thinking of a career in science.
Oh, for sure. And that's a lot of their purpose.
Main thing,
you know? I mean, there's a big drive towards careers in science here and elsewhere. I mean, we see that in the university at the moment as well. But actually, in fact, yesterday I read a very interesting article that said the STEM agenda, the science, technology, engineering and mathematics agenda, should actually be the STEAM agenda because it should also include art, because if you don't have creativity, then none of it makes sense.
There you go.
And I agree completely.
Absolutely,
And just to finish my list, the festivals around occasions are the other ones as well. So things like Halloween festivals and, of course, St. Patrick's Day Festival, which is one from my part of the world. Anzac Day parades, things like that. So festivals built around occasions.
And definitely Anzac Day seems to be getting bigger. I don't know if it's my imagination or not, but it seems to. This year, everybody seemed to be out.
It's funny. I think this was my 7th Anzac Day. And even in that relatively short period of time, I would agree with you and based on my own
estimate. Very peaceful as well. Everyone was just sort of very quiet around the streets, but then you get together in those Burley and Mudjerabar and all those places, and they're just all the communities there just for one thing. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's as occasions or festivals go around occasions, that's a more solemn and dignified one than, you know, say St. Patrick's Day, which is a little bit more.
Or Supernova.
And of course, I mean, just keeping it local, the Gold Coast is awash with festivals, no pun intended, but you mentioned a few of them, like Blues on Broadbeach, which brought in $20 million to the local economy last year, the Broadbeach Jazz Weekend, the Sci-Fi Festival, the Film Festival on right now, the Shorts in Paradise Short Film Festival, Opera on the Beach, the Swell Sculpture Festival. Festival, just to name a few of, yes. of many.
Mm, yeah, it's fantastic. So how do you think festivals can benefit cities?
Well, we could take a number of views on that. I mean, generally, they're very beneficial. But one of the things that I like about festivals is they represent a move away from what we sometimes refer to as concrete culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the idea that traditionally cities have tended to invest in things like museums or stadiums. So, you know, big infrastructure, expensive buildings and projects, the kind of concrete culture. But a lot of those pieces of infrastructure are empty a lot of the time. Stadiums sit empty most of the year. Museums are only busy on certain occasions throughout the year. So by moving towards festivals, what you do is you champion a cheaper, more adaptable way to bolster your city and bolster specific communities within it. They're also really, really good for urban branding, so associating your city with specific festivals. Mm-hmm. So then you're like, if you think about the most famous example of all is the Edinburgh Festival and the Fringe Festival.
Yes.
You know, so Edinburgh and the festival are intertwined in everybody's minds. Now, that's really successful urban branding. I mean, they have 70 years of marketing behind them, but nonetheless. So it's good for locals. And then you also start bringing tourists into the area, and festivals tend to beget festivals. One of the other really good things about festivals, as opposed to kind of concrete culture, is that they tend to be open and inclusive. Oftentimes there's no charge or a very minor charge to get into them.
So it's accessible for families.
Accessible
if they just go for half a day, one day, rather than go to the museum or, you know, somewhere where you've got to pay to go in.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, and you can come and go based on your own schedule and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other nice things about festivals is they can be very good at activating underused or dead spaces. So, mm-hmm. for example, old industrial spaces or parks at nighttime. You know, places
like
that.
It makes it a bit exciting,
doesn't
it? It
does,
doesn't it? Like a ghost tour or something like that.
Yeah, and it brings people into parts of the city that they've probably never seen or never encountered before, and it makes those places accessible and open and you know, safe as well. I mean, you may not be that enthusiastic about wandering through a park at nighttime generally, but if there's a festival on, you're going to go and check it out probably.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another good thing that festivals do is they utilize existing space, so they don't really require a lot of new infrastructure. Mostly they're able to work with what's already there, and they'll refashion and repurpose.
So is it hard to, like, get permission to have a festival? Just say somebody's listening and thinking, I'd like to do this festival. Is it hard? Like, is it difficult through council, or is there a bit of red tape? Is it easy? Is it...
It depends on what city we're talking about, and they're all different. There's always some red tape.
Mm-hmm.
Some cities are very conscious of reducing this red tape.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done. So, for example, if you look at three very successful festival cities, which again, Edinburgh, but also Nashville and Austin, both in the US, all three of those cities have designated offices within City Hall that are dedicated to culture and the delivery of culture via festivals and other means. And so these offices then have their own bureaucratic influence, and they can act as liaisons with local artists, and they can ease the organization and reduce the red tape, so a festival can be conceived and activated or run again for a second or a third or a tenth time.
And it's only good for the community, isn't it? It's only going to promote, you know, families getting together, visitors coming. So you'd think it would be an easy thing to organize.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. It should be. But, you know, there are other cities. It can be very bureaucratic. There can be a lot of red tape. There's always, you know, concerns and anxieties about things like public liability as well. That's, you know, that occurs everywhere. But really, it depends on the city whether they decide to strategically support festivals or not, mm-hmm. or the degree of strategic support.
So how can festivals' popularity be safeguarded so that, you know, they're always on?
Well, festivals are very popular, right, which is great, but it's not a cost-free thing. So too many festivals is actually a bad thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, you can have too many festivals, your calendar gets too full and people get overwhelmed and lose interest, or festivals can't, you know, there's not enough space or place for each of them to function efficiently. You take, for example, somewhere like Melbourne, which has probably got the richest city festival culture in the country. Their festival scene is at or close to saturation point.
Mm-hmm.
So they have so many festivals now on the calendar that it's almost too much. And what we're hearing from festival organizers down there is that in order for some of these festivals to survive, what they really need to do is, first of all, consider who they're serving and why, and then think about the possibility of merging
mm-hmm.
to avoid duplication. So if you think about, you know, if you've got a short story festival and a poetry festival happening one after the other, perhaps it's a better idea to merge
them. Yeah. And would cut costs as well, I imagine.
Yeah, it would. But, you know, that depends on the involved parties, the artists and the organisers, and whether council supports that. And mm-hmm. if you join two you know, if you join two-day festivals, maybe you're going to make 1 3-day festival. Is there capacity for a 3-day festival? So they're important questions. But so what you don't want is too many festivals. You want the right number of festivals.
So do you think we have the right number on the Gold Coast?
I think Gold Coast has a very nice number right now. Yeah, I think it does. You know, too many more would probably be too many, because the other thing is festivals are they're also competing with other urban attractions, and particularly down here where you've got a huge amount of attraction around you know, the beach and sport and,
yes,
and water-based activity and things like that. You know, the people only have so much time, money and attention, so you don't want to over-compete with other things.
But our festivals seem to be a little bit different. Like, there's just something for everybody. We've got Blues Fest, blues fans. Well, not all blues fans, but, you know, just having Bleach, that's completely different. And then, so I think we've got a good mix, really.
Oh, I agree. I think that, yeah, you know, I mean, we've talked about stuff in the, you know, on the Urban Squeeze in the past. We've talked about things like music in the city and stuff like that. And you know, Jason, who also presents the show, you know, we're quite complimentary of the cultural program and cultural endeavours that are supported by the City Council here. I mean, of course, mm-hmm, you've got the Gold Coast Arts Centre and all that, and
yes,
you've got the kind of cultural precinct, and that's all a work in progress and a very good one. And you've got, you know, public art trails and stuff like that, which are all great. So I would say that Gold Coast is doing an excellent job, mm-hmm, and I think that the council here is very supportive. You might argue that, you know, they're trying to play catch up on some of the other cities, but that's okay. You know, they're doing a good job of it and people are enjoying it. So, mm-hmm, yeah, I think the Gold Coast has an awful lot to offer as a destination for festivals, as a festival city.
So what got you interested in all this urban planning and the job that you do at Griffith?
What got me interested in it? Well, I've always been interested in cities and how they run and what keeps them going and mm-hmm, what keeps people invested in them and how they become successful or how they fail. That was always something I was interested in.
And you were always
in.
From a city? Were you from a city? Or
yeah, I'm from a small city in Ireland called Cork. It's mm-hmm, 200,000 people. It's the second city in Ireland, you know, but Ireland's
yes,
a small place,
yes,
right? But
yes,
it's, you
yes,
know, so it's like if you want to think of Cork in Australian terms, it's a bit like Melbourne, but much smaller, but it's a very similar city. It's mm-hmm, got a quite similar presentation and function. But I was always interested in cities, and then I was always interested in things like, you know, urban heritage and public art and stuff like that. And I used to do a lot of work with a group in an area called the Shandon Area Renewal Association. We did a lot of festival organization and public art projects and sort of community renewal from the ground up, and all of that plus an interest in the relationship between cities and climate change on another front got
yes,
me interested in planning as a way of understanding and accessing and being participant in all of this. That's how I got into it originally.
Yes. And why Australia? Why did you come here?
I was studying, well, I finished studying my planning qualifications in Ireland. And while I was doing that, I'd encountered a professor from out here who was with Griffith at the time. And he was looking at some stuff around climate change adaptation, which really resonated with me. And I really wanted to work on that. It was a very emerging topic at the time. So we stayed in contact and I did some research in the area, and one thing led to another. And I got a scholarship from the CSIRO to come and do a PhD at Griffith. And
wow,
I did that. And I've had an academic career since. I left Griffith for a while and then came back. But, mm-hmm, so I've been here ever since and thriving.
Yeah, it's fantastic because it's a good title you've got there, the Urban Planner at the School of Environment. So you have lots of students. They learn about urban planning and the environment to join the two together. Is that right?
Yeah, we that's the approach that we take. We do urban and environmental planning. Other universities do urban and regional planning, for example, urban and metropolitan planning. We're Griffith's history and foundation was always in environmental studies. So there's a heavy dose of environmental content in our planning program. And actually, we were thrilled last week, just as a small plug, there was a national survey of student satisfaction with planning and architecture courses across the country, and we came out on top, the number one for student satisfaction. So we have the happiest students.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what sort of jobs will they go on to do?
A lot of them are going to go on to jobs in council.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great thing. We get more environmentally friendly. And
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, cities and how we plan and run them, that changes. You know, we go through different phases and different concerns, and environmental concerns are pretty critical right now. So a lot of our students are going to go and work with council in that regard. Others will go into the private sector, either working for planning consultancies or maybe development corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the others will go and work for government as policy advisors, for example.
So do you think it's changed a lot, the environmental impact and cities, you know, with all these festivals being organised? Do you think that cities have changed a lot in the last 10 years?
Yes, they have. You know, we have more people than ever living in cities now. I mean, this is very, I've said this on the show before, but this is a highly urbanized country. 90% of Australians, so 9 out of 10 people in this country live in a city.
Mm.
You know, we're not a frontier country anymore. It's not an outback nation. We have a huge you know, the outback is a huge area, but there's not very many people living there. Most people are in cities now, and globally that's the way it's going as well. It's heading towards 60%, I think, but last time I checked, I have to double check my figures, it's well over half the world's population anyways in cities. But more than that, we're developing a city, an appreciation and an understanding of cities as a place where, you know, our best and worst features can be realized and you know, our best features can be celebrated. And there's a whole focus now on cities that's really come in the last 10 years, and cities as places where things can happen, and cities as exciting, vibrant places. And a lot of this festival culture has followed. I mean, festivals were around for long before that. But
yes,
if you even look at just simple stuff, like look at TV advertising, you know, car advertising and things like that. You know, a decade or more ago, it was a car on the open road. Now an awful lot of car advertisements are people driving around tight city streets and things like that, or trying to discover some pop-up food festival or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, so, that's interesting.
You know, there's a clear interest in cities and how we live in them and how we use them now. And that's only intensifying as more people live in them.
And making it more of a country feel, I guess, with the community, if you have things organised in certain parts like festivals, that you bring the community together. So it seems like a small town, but you're in this big city.
Yeah, and this is something that we really strive for in planning. This is a real preoccupation of planners now, is this to try and create the urban village feel.
Yeah, and I think everyone loves that, don't they?
Yeah, and it happens quite organically actually here on the coast, and many, because if you think about the history of the Gold Coast was a series of coastal towns which have kind of gradually merged together, but
yes,
each one retains its unique character. But a lot of other cities don't have that. And they really want that, or they really want something approximating that. You see it as well in bigger cities like London.
Yes.
Like London was, you know, discrete boroughs which eventually kind of amalgamated into a larger metropolitan area. But you go to parts of London, they have very unique cultures like Camden or Hackney or Brixton or wherever. But a lot of cities where you didn't have that to begin with, where they were sort of, they grew a little bit more organically or in an unplanned way, there's a kind of a big effort now in global planning, and we see it here as well, to try and develop this urban village thing, to work with spaces that are walkable. So we use, you know, things like walkability indexes, and people will walk 400 kilometers in 5 minutes, or sorry, 400 meters in 5 minutes, or 800 meters in 10 minutes. And that's sort of we look at that as being a blast zone for activity.
Yes.
So, we try and bring the large back to the small.
We're talking urban squeeze with Dr. Tony Matthews, who's an urban planner with the School of Environment at Griffith University. We're chatting about festivals and how communities have joined together because of festivals. And we've been talking about like the strip of the Gold Coast and how there's little sections now. Like when I first arrived here in the 90s, it was just all one sort of thing. I think that the communities have certainly come together more. Like Burleigh has their own little sort of things that happen on a Sunday night. It's not a festival, but the fire throwers are there and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Currumbin has their thing where it's about the surfing. And you know, I think it's, and down south even further, you know, it's really, there's a little sort of area that, you know, you sort of work out which one suits you.
That's, and I remember that when I first came here, you know, and my wife and I were exploring the area, and we went to Burleigh and we went to Southport and we went down to Currumbin and Coolangatta, and I remember just thinking, all of these places are only separated by a few kilometres of the Gold Coast Highway, but they're all so different.
They're different, aren't they?
You know, they really are, and they all have their unique features and their unique culture and their own unique kind of vibe and feel about them. And I was struck by that straight away. You know, as an outsider looking at the Gold Coast, you kind of just think it's this large
strip
with, you know, beach in the day and nightclubs at night, but it's so much more nuanced and subtle than that.
And so where did you end up? Which little place did you like the best?
I've always liked Burleigh. I've always been a huge fan of Burleigh. I really do like Burleigh, and I think it's still a really manageable size, and it hasn't been overdeveloped yet.
No.
And hopefully won't be.
No.
And it's got a nice beach, and it's protected by the headland, and there's good parking there.
Yeah, and good restaurants and a beautiful...
I love Burleigh.
It's a great feel, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That's my favourite too.
Oh, good, we agree.
Well, it's been great chatting to you.
Likewise.
So hopefully festivals will continue.
I think they will.
Yeah, and we've got to get some new, different ones, I think.
I think we do, and you know what's also a great idea?
What?
A nightmare.
A nightmare festival.
Yeah, not a nightmare festival, but a nightmare, as in we have a mayor of the Gold Coast.
Yes.
You know, but if we had a... This is something that Amsterdam has done very successfully. A lot
really?
Of cities are following. They've got a separate city mayor for nighttime stuff.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of cities are cottoning on to this idea of the nighttime economy, and they're saying, well, yeah, you know, there's a fair amount of our activity, social and economic activity goes on during the day, but there's also a very rich...
culture at night. So a mayor, especially for the nighttime events.
Maybe we should have a nighttime mayor who shepherds that.
I think you should go on... see the council about that.
Or maybe run for office.
Or maybe run for office. There we go. Okay, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Tony Matthews, an urban planner with the School of Environment at Griffith University.